Imagine there's no America.
Welcome to Civilization Jihad Awareness, the show where truth wins every time. And let's just talk quickly about where that term Civilization Jihad comes from. That comes from a document from that was discovered in the – it was a document discovered thanks to Operation Green Quest. Now, Operation Green Quest was a cooperative counterterrorism task force that included Treasury Department personnel, members of the FBI, custom agents, and several other agencies. It was created in October 2001 for the purpose of tracking finances used to support terrorism. At the time Operation Green Quest was introduced to the public, 66 persons and corporations had their finances frozen and seized. Eventually, the explanatory memorandum was used in 2007 as evidence in the United States versus Holy Land Foundation trial. This document revealed for the first time to the U.S. government and its people that they have a real enemy, a group that had previously dismissed they had previously dismissed as someone to watch but not to be concerned of. The document had all one important section that is cited when the Muslim Brotherhood is discussed in America. And here's where that section comes from. Number four, understanding the role of the Muslim Brotherhood in North America. The process of settlement is a civilization jihadist process with all the word means. The Ikhwan Brotherhood must understand that their work in America is a kind of grand jihad in eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within and sabotaging its miserable house by their hands and the hands of believers so that it is eliminated and God's religion is made victorious over all other religions. Without this level of understanding, we are not up to this challenge and have not prepared ourselves for jihad yet. It is a Muslim's destiny to perform jihad and work wherever he is and wherever he lands until the final hour comes. And there is no escape from that destiny except for those who choose to slack. But would the slackers and the Mujahideen be equal? This is what the Muslim Brotherhood's goal is for North America. pretty much the same for the entire world. They want to take over the world. You've heard of Binky and the Brain, and you talk about, and they always talk about world domination, taking over the world. Yes, but the thing is, the only, in the words of one of my colleagues, Syed Shabi, the only ones, the only empire that's died and really talks about world conquest over and over again and teaches it is the Islam. Is Islam. That's the only empire that's failed that continually wants to come back. Surprisingly, you know, the Soviets may talk about it, but they were never an empire. They tried to be. So let's get into the news. This is a big, big news week. And some of these stories blow my mind. I have to tell you, this first story is interesting to me. Unfortunately, I'm used to this story. And let me explain. I'm going to put this link into the chat room. And my friends in Florida will probably be disgusted also if you don't know already. How many, if there's any football fans in here, you're not going to be happy reading this one. Okay, so here we go. St. Bonaventure University Center for Arab and Islamic Study opens a new location. Ooh, isn't that nice? St. Bonaventure is now a place for Arab and Islamic studies. Wow. They have a special location in a Catholic school. St. Bonaventure's University Center for Arab and Islamic Studies held the grand opening of its new location Wednesday night, a move meant to show a continued commitment promoting appreciation of Islamic culture and relations between Muslims and, it says Christians, it's Catholics. Officials from the university and the local Muslim community were present for the ribbon-cutting ceremony at the new renovated space in Plasman Hall. CAIS has operated in the John J. Murphy Professional Building since 2015. So they want to move from being Catholic to Muslim at St. Bonaventure. Okay. Father Michael Calabria, director of CAIS, ooh, they have a Catholic over this facility, this is really interesting, said the decision to relocate Plasman Hall and within the university's Modern Languages Department was made last spring. He noted it's a homecoming of sorts, as Plasman Hall housed the first Arabic courses ever taught at St. Bonaventure in 2004. So they're going to equate Islam with Arabic. You understand what they're saying here. Islam and Arabic are synonymous, is what they're saying. This is a scary thought process. So when you start to talk about Arabic-speaking people, they're all automatically going to say, oh, you must be Muslim. Sorry, there are Christians who speak Arabic. There are Jews who speak Arabic. There are people from a lot of different faiths who speak Arabic. So you're just going to assume they're Muslim. And that's a thing we're going to be harping on in the near future, not today, but that is a sad, sad place to go. How about this one? This is straight out of Texas, and I'll throw this in the chat room. This one's this stuff just gets me sometimes. Yeah, if you go to St. Bonaventure, you're a fan of St. Bonaventure's sports, I would definitely write to them. How can they have a Catholic person running an Islamic studies department? We have serious questions here. Maybe they'd consider it. Do Catholics now consider Islam Catholic? I don't think the Muslims consider it that way. So this is where it gets bad. Going back, Texas. This comes from Jihad Watch. Muslim migrant couple indicted for enslaving girl for 16 years. This is by Robert Spencer. Why not? Slavery is acceptable in Islam. The Quran has Allah telling Muhammad that he has given him girls as sex slaves. Prophet, we have made lawful for you the wives to whom you have granted dowries and the slave girls whom God has given you as booty. Quran 33:50. Muhammad bought slaves And here this comes, Jabir, Alep, Jabir reported, there came a slave and pledged allegiance to Allah's apostle on migration. He did not know that he was a slave. Then there came his master and demanded him back. Whereupon Allah's apostle said, sell him to me. And he bought him for two black slaves and did not afterwards make allegiance from anyone until he had asked him whether he was a slave or a freeman. That's Muslim 3901. That's a hadith, Muslim hadith, Muslim 3901. Here's another one from Bukhari 559-512. Muhammad took female infidel captives as slaves. Narrated Anas, the Prophet offered the Fajr prayer near Kabar when it was still dark and then said, Allah Akbar, Kabar is destroyed, for whenever we approach a hostile nation to fight, the evil will be mourning for those who have been warned. Then the inhabitants of Kabar came out, running on the roads. The Prophet had their warriors killed, their offspring and women taken as captives. Safiya was among the captives. She first came in the share of Daya Akta, but later she belonged to the Prophet. The Prophet made her manumission as her mar. So basically, Muhammad freed her and married her, but he didn't do this to all his slaves. Muhammad owned slaves. This is narrated by Anas bin Malik. Allah's apostle was on a journey, and he had a black slave called Anjasha, and she was driving the camels very fast, and there were women riding on those camels. Allah's apostle said, Walhaka, Anjasha, drive slowly the camels with the glass vessels. We're talking about the women. This is from Bukhari 873-182. There's no mention of Muhammad freeing Anjasha. And this, again, is all about a Texas couple indicted on charges. They enslaved a Guinean girl. Comes from Associated Press. The son and daughter-in-law of a former West African leader have been indicted on charges that they enslaved a girl from their native country while living in Texas. Mohamed Touré and his wife, Denise Cross Touré, were named in an indictment returned Wednesday. The Fort Worth residents, both 57, are charged with forced labor, alien harboring, and conspiracy. Mohamed Touré also is charged with making false statements to federal officers. The indictments allege that Pair brought a girl from Guinea in 2000 and forced her to work in their home for 16 years without pay. Neighbors helped the woman escape in August of 2016. The couple was arrested, and defense attorneys have denied the charges. Mohamed Touré is the son of late Ahmed Sekou Touré, the first president of Guinea. Wow. You think about that. We don't think about people getting arrested for slavery here in the United States, but it is happening. This stuff is just kind of – some of these headlines this week, I sit there and go, wait, what's wrong, man? Come on, wake up. Here's another one I'm going to throw in there. And the headlines I put in from the Middle East Forum, I just want to say this is one of the outstanding organizations. If you've got extra money to throw their way, you can throw it my way, you can throw it their way, we'll be happy. All right, going on. This one, Bangladeshi Islamists go to Washington. You know, I don't get this article because I mean, again, this is an outstanding article, again, by Sam Westrup. He works for the Middle East Forum. He leads the Islamist project, Islamist Watch. I tell you, his work is outstanding. His research is top notch. And one of these days, I got to see if I can get him on. He just doesn't do radio much. But let me read this one to you from Sam Westrup and his partner. Let me get the name. Abba Shankar. From October 9th to 12th, London-based barrister Abdur Razak will visit Washington, D.C. to meet with White House officials, legislators, House committee staffers, and analysts at a number of think tanks. That a lawyer is speaking with politicians isn't particularly worrying, but the fact that Razak is also an assistant secretary general of the violent South Asian group Jamaat-e-Islami is an enormous problem. Are D.C. officials aware of who exactly they are meeting? Founded in Lahore, then British India, in 1941, the Islamist theorist Abu Ala Maududi has established branches in countries all around the world, including a substantial network in the United States. JI came to prominence in 1971 after its operatives assisted in the murder of hundreds of thousands of Bangladeshis fighting for freedom from Pakistani rule. 3 million people reportedly died in this catastrophic war, and millions fled to neighboring India as refugees. This is just insane. I mean, and they're going to have this guy. In the decades since the 1971 war, has committed violent acts. JI has committed violent acts all across South Asia. And today, the Bangladeshi branch is closely involved with Islamist terror in both Bangladesh and India. JI leaders have openly expressed support for Taliban terrorists and mourned their deaths. And in 2017, the U.S. government designated Hizbul Mujahideen and the Kashmiri Jihadist Group, a JI Pakistani military wing, as a terrorist organization. Over the last decade, a war crimes tribunal has tried a number of the 1971 JI operatives for their roles in the genocide, which included establishing and leading killing squads to slaughter innocent men, women, and children. Some of those convicted were executed. The lead defense counsel for these war crimes was none other than Abdul Razak. In America, if JI operatives have their own prominent institutions, which pose as representative bodies of American Muslims, these institutions and their officials have served as vocal supporters of JI in Pakistan and Bangladesh and helped coordinate protests against the War Crimes Tribunal in Bangladesh. In fact, one of the JI war criminals tried in absentia in Bangladesh had fled to the U.S. His name is Ashfarzaman Khan, had fled to the U.S. and helped establish and lead one of these American JI organizations known as the Islamic Circle of North America, ICNA. Testimony and evidence shows that Khan served as the chief executor of a killing squad named Al-Badar. The War Crimes Tribunal concluded that he had carried out the abductions and murder of 18 Bangladeshi intellectuals. They killed top professors, journalists, and doctors to make the nation devoid of any talent, senior prosecutor M.K. Rahman said immediately following the guilty verdict against Khan. ICNA does not hide its affiliations and is openly identified as an Islamist circle. ICNA's educational programs have featured staunch hardline ideologues, and founder Maduti's books have been promoted on the website of ICNA's youth division, Young Muslims. In fact, JI's leader, Yusuf Islahi, a leader of JI India's Institute, JI Hind, has spoken at ICNA conventions and is a chief patron of an ICNA proselytizing project named Why Islam. At a 2001 JI Hind event hosted by the Indian city of Anglia, Aligarh Islahi reportedly blamed Jews for the 9/11 attacks, which he nevertheless described as befitting response to American ignorance. I would not want this man visiting us. I don't understand. This is not Obama's presidency. This is President Trump. Why this is being permitted is beyond me. The more I read on this, this article has, this is about another 10 paragraphs to go, and I'm just not going to read it all. I'll tell you, you need to pick up and read this stuff. It is mind-numbing. Going on. And this next one is, okay, I'm going to come back to get this other one here. Okay. Investigative Project on Terrorism wrote something about CARE this week, and this is by John Rossomondo, another great author, research writer as well. Now, Investigative Project on Terrorism is another outstanding place if you have extra cash to throw your money on Steve Emerson's research group on terrorism, and it's one of the best sites on the internet if you want to learn anything about terrorism. Here we go. CAIR chief to meet. CAIR, C-A-I-R, CAIR chief to meet with Turkish and Iranian presidents. Now, John Resimendo, this came out September 24th. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan and Iranian President Hassan Rouhani invited Nihad Awad, the Council on American Islamic Relations executive director, to meet with them in New York during this week's UN General Assembly meeting. It's not about photo ops for me, I had wrote on Twitter. It's about real issues in people's lives. Please engage and tell me what issues and questions I should raise. It marks the third straight year Awad met with Erdogan and the UN session, joining U.S. Council of Muslim Organization leaders last year and with two dozen other Islamists in 2016. It makes you wonder what Awad gets in return from Erdogan's government, said exiled Turkish journalist Abdullah Bozkurt, who noted Erdogan has jailed 60,000 opponents. Despite Erdogan's increasing authoritarian actions, Awad and his organization have helped Erdogan's Turkey out as a beacon. As a beacon of democracy. Awad has been warm toward Turkey and Erdogan. His relations with Iran have been different. He attended a 2009 meeting with then President Mohammad Ahmadinejad, but skipped similar meetings with Hassan Rouhani in protest of Iran's support of Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad. He apparently lambasted Rouhani during a 2016 meeting, blaming Iran for a Syrian bloodshed and denouncing Iran for promoting sectarianism. Erdogan will be in New York until Thursday. He spoke over the weekend at several events sponsored by the Turkish American National Steering Committee. His son-in-law, Turkey's finance minister, Berya Albayrak, joined Erdogan at a speech he gave Sunday to TASS supporters. The Turkish news website Haberier.com reported hacked emails from TASS leaders show they gave Albayrak regular updates about espionage on behalf of Erdogan. One such email from a former TASS co-chairman, Ibrahim Oyar, to Albayrak described a July 2016 White House rally against the Turkish coup attempt that he organized. Awad and the other American Islamist leaders participated in that rally and also was sponsored by TASS. Why anybody would want to talk to, you got to think about this. If we, as CAIR is a little bit more simple. The Hamas has been meeting with Iran and begging for money over and over again. And they usually do that. And it's not unusual at all. However, seeing Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood get together with Iran is not unusual. Now, think of Erdogan as the Muslim Brotherhood. Bring him in, and then you'll have that trifecta type. It's, you know, they're all these groups are related to the Muslim Brotherhood. So all these terror groups. So this is just not unusual. So it's a good article to read. You go and grab that article. Good, excellent one. How about this one? And make sure I got the right one here. Yes, this is United States of America, but I have to reread this every time I see it. It's hard for me to accept as happening here. Now, this headline comes from KTLA. Now, KTLA is a TV site, and I'm just going to post this into the chat room real quick. It's a kind of a mind number when I look at this. Every time I look at it, I have to stop and think, that can't be here. Well, let me just read this one. A Salinas man was charged. Oh, by the way, I should give credit to the writer. This is by Angela Rose Bickman, published September 21st. I think 21st, yeah. Yeah. Salinas man was charged with four felony counts after being found with two homemade bombs in his vehicle at a traffic stop in Brea on Tuesday night, authorities said. Saleha Ali was charged Thursday with intent to unlawfully make destructive devices of a destructive, two counts of possession of a destructive device and the sale of transportation of a destructive device, the Orange County District Attorney's Office announced Friday. Korea Police Department officers pulled Ali over for having expired registration at a traffic stop in the area of South Orange Street and Imperial Highway. Police say they found the two bombs when they checked his black Toyota Corolla. The DA's office described the bombs as improvised explosive devices and said they were in containers covered in shrapnel. The devices were taken by an Orange County Sheriff's bomb squad, and Ali was arrested and put in Orange County jail. Police said Thursday his bail was set at $500,000. If convicted and as charged, Ali will receive a maximum sentence of 10 years in state prison. He is due in court for a pretrial hearing on September 28th. So we're talking about tomorrow. This is just kind of freaky. Imagine the cop doing a regular traffic stop and finding something like this. That's really scary. And then you realize you just stopped a terrorist act from happening just for doing your job. Wow. Freaky, freaky, scary. Like I said, this is a big, big news week. How about this one? This comes from WND. And I don't have this one ready to jump, throw in the chat room. So my apologies, people. I should say, welcome. We got Bigfoot and Eric Kaffer, Gary Comfer, Tel Fritzy back again. Yeah. And Annie. Yes. Welcome Vorpal. And Vorpal was the first one in the chat room today. And Bigfoot was second place. Okay. Going back, WND article by Bob Unruh. Obama's policies favoring Muslim students must go, feds told. Federal officials are being urged to drop Obama administration policies that give special treatment to Muslim students in violation of the Constitution. The request comes from the Freedom of Consciousness Defense Fund, which is opposed in court several school districts over practices favoring Muslims. The group's letter is addressed to John Gore, the acting assistant attorney general in the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department, and Kenneth Marcus, the assistant secretary for civil rights in the Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights. Whew. Wow, that's a long, long thing to say. The organization is asking the government to rescind policies in which schools single out a religious sect for preferential treatment or otherwise classify on the basis of religion, and allow sectarian organizations like CARE to advance their political or religious agenda in schools. It also should define bullying and harassment and focus on alleged bullying offensive conduct rather than his motive or intent. The letter explains, to be clear, school districts do not have a wide range of constitutionally sound measures to address violence, threats, and abuses, but schools should ensure an equally safe and welcoming educational environment for all students, regardless of religion. And that happens in every school. It's a normal way of life. You don't see this stuff they're talking about is, well, you know, claiming that Islam is the one that's being beaten on. It's crazy, crazy. And they're making this statement, well, you got to have, give Muslims special choices and things like that. No, we don't. And that's what they're getting at. CARE is saying, well, Muslims are being abused more. They're being, whatever. No. It's not happening. They do this so they get special attention. This is where we keep seeing them playing the victim rather than, even after a terrorist action, they play the victim. This stuff is freaky scary. So now they're getting into schools by playing the victim. We can't allow this to continue. We have to start exposing these awful atrocities for what they are, lies. And not doing that is not helping us. We have to get the truth out. And that means we have to expose these horrendous pieces of crap of lies. How about this one? Switching over to Canada. Oops. Oh, I got a couple more U.S. stories here. Another one from Investigative Project on Terrorism. Linda Sarsour, Blood Libel. Now, Linda Sessor opens her mouth, regularly puts her foot in it, and these days she doesn't have to do it too much because she's so good at it, everybody just expects her to walk around with her foot in her mouth. But here's from Investigative Project on Terrorism. They write, when police officers in America shoot unarmed black people, Jewish hands lurk in the background. So says Linda Sessor, perhaps the most visible Muslim political advocate in the United States, a co-chair of the National Women's March and a campaign surrogate for a politicians including Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, program sponsored by the Anti-Defamation League that takes American police officials to Israel for a week-long seminar is fueling police brutality. Yeah, like that's really what's going to happen. Sarsour said earlier this month at the Islamic Society of North America annual conventions. So they get a ride to Israel, and they're going to come back from violent. I think they come out mellowed, you know, having had a chance to go see, you know, that far away for a vacation. Yeah. Or a training session. Yeah. It's kind of both when you get to take a travel like that. Okay. Yeah. It's not going to make them violent. ADL, Linda Cockroach says in response to a question, has been a purveyor of Islamophobia against our community. ADL officials, according to Sarsour, position themselves as somehow being part of the progressive movement, she said. But what they do is, she says, I'll give you an example of something that they do. If you're part of a criminal justice reform movement, and if you believe in the idea of ending police brutality and misconduct of law enforcement officers across the country, then you do not support an organization that takes police officers from America, funds their trips, takes them to Israel so they can be trained by Israeli police officers and military. And then they come back here and do what? Stop and frisk, killing unarmed black people. I mean, it's just this run-of-the-mile thing. She's making accusations. This is just disgusting. Niecy Jacobs, co-founder of the Women's March for All, a group that broke away from the National Women's March because of its anti-Semitic concerns about Sarsour and national co-chair Tamika Mallory among its activities. Women's March for All has a petition calling on Sarsour and Mallory to be replaced. It's not only anti-Semitic, she says, it's BS. She's lying to a bunch of gullible, hurt people. She's like a horrible guru that just lies because she has her own agenda. In softer language, Austin, Texas, Assistant Police Chief Chris McIlvain and his experience on the 2015 ADL-sponsored seminar in Israel was not even remotely close to what Sarsour described. There was no tactical training, no discussions of forceful coercion techniques, he said. Police departments must maintain a state of readiness for all kinds of threats, from mass shooting to terrorist attacks. Israel has experience with these challenges that can be helpful to police departments there. Here, the ADL is a good partner of law enforcement, combating hate groups of all types. The idea is not to divert hate from one group or another. She says it's to eliminate it. It's just nonstop talking about this idiot, Linda Sarsour. It's funny because I never got more hits from anything else than when I wrote an article about her. Maybe there's so many people that think she deserves fame. She's just not a good person to waste your time on. So I'm going to go on. Here's a new article by Andrew Herod that's in the American Thinker. It was out last week, September 15th, and I somehow missed it. And this is about Act for America. It was in the American Thinker. America is under attack. Our country, this is from a statement made by Bridget Gabriel. America is under attack. Our country is being transformed before our very eyes. Bridget Gabriel said on September 14th in a ballroom in Crystal City, Virginia's Hyatt Regency Hotel. Act's 10th Anniversary National Security Conference brought together over 200 ACT activists nationwide for a clarion call of political warfare to preserve American freedoms against a myriad subversive Islamist and leftist threats. Gabriel described how since she founded ACT in 2002, today the national security threat is no longer confined to radical Islamic terrorism. ACT is not a one-trick pony. Rather, the group must contend with numerous other like Antifa, Black Lives Matter, and MS-13 groups. Against these criminal and totalitarian organizations, ACT for America is today the largest grassroots national security organization in the country with 1 million members. Gabriel emphasized the stark polarization between the worldviews of freedom-loving conservative groups like ACT and their opponents. Our enemy is dedicated to destroying us, she said. No matter what you do, they are going to call you a hater. Accordingly, she dismissed appeals that we need to convert the unconverted. And don't waste your time. Later in the afternoon, Zionist Organization of America National President Morton Klein echoed Gabrielle's observation about the leftist slanderers. Doesn't the left love to use the word racist? But he said, but while noting conference protesters outside, without the word, they would have nothing to say. But by contrast, as he demonstrated with his presentation's reiteration of past arguments, ACT is among few groups that tells the whole courageous, rational truth about the Arab-Islamic war against the West and Israel. And that's basically what I've been doing for a few years, telling the truth on with just over the air here. And I thank you for the opportunity. Now, Canada has an article out there I thought is all important. And I'm just thankful that I didn't see this. This concept makes me upset, and I can understand Tariq Fatah is like a commie Muslim guy, and he's very interesting writer. I like some of the truths he shares. And this is in the Toronto Sun. It came out September 25th. Fatah: bare-chested religious self-flagellation has no place on our streets. For many years now, a medieval ritual is being enacted by Muslims on the streets of Canada to mourn the murder of 1,400 years ago of Prophet Muhammad's grandson, Hussein ibn Ali, at the Iraqi city of Karbala. This is where his fellow Muslims, loyal to the ruler of Islamic Caliphate of the time, slaughtered Prophet Muhammad's entire progeny, save a few women and an ailing son. To put this in perspective, the tragedy observed as Asherah unfolded way back October 10th in 680 AD. The first time non-Muslim Canadians saw the spectacle Asherah march was in 2010, when the processions were held in cold weather in Vancouver, Toronto, Calgary, and in Montreal. Nothing other than mourning songs and symbolic light beatings of the chest was displayed. In the Middle East and the Indian subcontinent, self-flagellation is not just beating the chest in wild unison, but it extends to whipping oneself with razor-sharp claw blades. These ritual of cracking skulls and bleeding baby boys with cuts on their heads. This year, the self-flagellation ritual reached a point where last Sunday, hundreds of young men took off their shirts on University Avenue, facing the U.S. consulate and starting beating themselves in frightening unison. A lawyer originally from Lebanon who was walking by the procession recognized what was happening and quickly recorded the scene, taking place outside of the 361 University Avenue courthouse, and sent it to the Toronto Sun. Another recording emerged from 2017 that showed this practice of hundreds of shirtless men marching on our streets, beating their bare chests and faces. This had happened without any objection by any politician, public figure, or police. I reached out to the candidates trying to get to be the Toronto's next mayor, and I asked them if they would permit such public lays of medieval rituals. And he goes on, and here we go. Here's this part. Mayor John Tory's office said the group marching bare-chested would not have received a permit from a city division for this activity. It would most likely be a protest, although a cultural ritual. It was done in front of the U.S. consulate. John Tory did not address the question whether he would permit such a process if elected. His main rival in this race, Jennifer Kesmet, did not respond at first, but after he persisted, her office then left the following message. Thanks for writing into the campaign. We hear your feedback and appreciate your sharing it with us. We'll pass along to our team. It's like, yeah, we heard you. We'll maybe do something, but forget it. My concerns here are just, you know, you're seeing this stuff and you're hearing this stuff. It's mind freaking numb. How can they allow this stuff in Canada? But look who else they ask. Tarek Fatah asked another candidate for mayor, and this one surprised me. The only candidate who did address the issue was Faith Goldie, who has been portrayed as a pariah by much of the media. I mean, she answered the question. She said it shouldn't happen on the streets. And it was sad that, you know, Faith Goldie's getting fried. And it seems like she could be good for Toronto. I don't know. I'm betting right now she doesn't have Ezra's vote. And that's Ezra from the Rebel Media. I don't think that she would have his vote. Okay, we're going to head over to the UK now and start with the articles there. And we have, this is one of the ones that's just blowing my mind. I am sad that I missed this article last week. But here we go. Extremist groups, this is from, I'm going to throw this in the Daily, it's a Daily Mail article, and I don't know how I missed this one last week, but I apparently did. And I'm going to throw the article in the chat room, and if you guys take a look at this, you'll be surprised. Cal asked me a little offline why I say I'm pretty sure certain people wouldn't back her, but ask me offline and I'll tell you why I said that. I'll tell you why later, Cal, thank you. I'll tell you why later. I've heard some things that were just, yeah, I'm not surprised Ezra said that. Okay. Sorry. Let me get into this article. This article by the Daily Mail, and I really feel sad that I missed this. Extremist groups are weaponizing Islamophobia and using human rights to promote ideology, say counter-terror czar is what it should say. This is by Sebastian Bates for Mail Online. Now, why this is important? This is in the UK. Now, guess who doesn't follow what this person says? That would be Theresa May, right? If she would just simply listen to her czar on counterterrorism or counter-extremism, she would be doing well. Hardliners cynically weaponize Islamophobia to undermine legitimate debate the government leads. Government's lead on counter-extremism says. Creator of the Commission for Counter-Extremism, Sarah Khan, says the Islamists use and abuse the notion of human rights. She said fundamentalists shut down debate by accusing critics of being anti-Muslim, undermining a genuine struggle against bigotry. Groups such as Hizb ut-Tahrir, for example, are traditionally rally against what they perceive to be Western human rights, and increase and cynically use human rights to promote Islamist ideology. So they have signs like "My Prophet equals my honor," "Ya Rasul Allah," like "We will die for you." I mean, this is stuff that's on pictures in the during this article. They and their sympathizers weaponize Islamophobia in an attempt to shut down legitimate debate about Islamic extremism while undermining the general struggle against anti-Muslim hatred. She said that the far-right groups had repackaged the racism with increased professionalism as they exploit social media. The prime minister announced the commission following the Islamist bombing of Manchester Arena last year. Hizbut Tahrir has called for Sharia to be introduced under a caliphate and is proscribed in much of the Middle East as well as Europe. So think about this. They're trying to get, this group is trying to say, hey, you know, you got to accept Sharia. You got to have it here. And, you know, again, they're going to scream Islamophobia if you don't. It's crazy. You hear this stuff. And Theresa May just turns around and kowtows to them. And yet, this woman has said something very important that must be listened to. Scary, scary stuff. I don't know how many are aware this week. Another horrible thing happened this week. Which is a cloud into a crowd of 100 children and teachers. And there was a police manhunt that was underway. Now, this was in Sweden, sorry. Two pupils were hurt with police manhunt that was underway. This happened September 25th, Tuesday. A spokesman for Sweden's police service said children threw themselves out of the way of the car, which appeared to have aimed directly for the group of 100 people, he said. The car accelerated into the group of students and teachers. The car increased speed and drove straight towards them. He drove into two of the students. One was injured on the wrist, and possibly other student was also injured. Police have today appealed for any information on the horrifying incident, which took place at 1 p.m. The group was made up of 100 children and 10 teachers from Majalbi Secondary School. They were walking from Hinselvagen to Grunstenjön. I think I said that somewhat right, as part of a social event. The car was described as a black or blue Saab. It was just driving around 25 miles per hour when it hit the first crowd. Crazy. I mean, the driver fled the scene. Witnesses were unable to identify whether the driver was male or female, so we're guessing probably wearing a hijab and maybe wearing the niqab. So... covered. Yeah, you can't tell what's underneath that, can you? You can say it looks like a woman, but it doesn't mean it is. Scary. And let's see here. Keep going. My other article here. Ireland. Radicalized Irish woman claims she traveled to Ireland with London Bridge attacker and says there are up to 150 Islamic extremists living there. This is by Paul Williams, September 24th, and it was in the Independent, which is in Ireland. An Irish woman who admits to having been radicalized after she converted to Islam claims that there are up to 150 Islamic extremists living in Ireland. The woman has also alleged that on several occasions she has visited She was visited in Ireland by Kurram Butt, the leader of the terror attack on London Bridge, which claimed the lives of 8 innocent people. Not her real name. Says that they traveled around the country together, meeting other extremists in places like Cavan, Limerick, and Clamath. The connections between Ireland and Islamist terrorism are investigated in a new documentary, Ireland's Jihadis, which will air on Virgin Media One yesterday. Would have aired yesterday. The program focuses on the dramatic claims made by the Irish woman who converted to Islam when she moved to live in the UK, claiming to have been influenced by the 9/11 attacks. Aliya claims that she met Butt through her then Muslim boyfriend, a Pakistani-born UK citizen called Raza, who is suspected of operating a number of internet fraud rackets targeting Irish companies to raise funds for ISIS. Last year, an Irish independent investigation revealed that Raza is wanted in connection with an attempt on September 2016 to defraud a Dublin company of $2.8 million. Raza and Aliyah moved back and forth from the UK and lived at an address in Santry. Raza and Aliyah moved back and forth from the UK and lived in the address at Santry between 2015 and 2016, where he registered a number of bogus front companies for the purpose of the scam. Sorry, guys, I'm trying to keep up, and my eyes are just a little buggy tonight. Sorry about that. It was during the period, stay with him numerous occasions. It's just mind-numbing. You start thinking about this. This lady's claiming she's having all these relationships with these people and that there's 150 of the jihadis there. What do you want to do with this? I mean, they're saying they don't have the police to deal with it. Why not start deporting the first one you find? Then deport the next one and the next one and the next one. Then you'll get rid of 100. Then you might have 50. If you still don't want to deport them, which I can't figure out why they don't. I mean, these people come into your country illegally. You don't need to justify kicking them out. They came without permission. They came into the country without being granted permission to come in. Just send them home. It is that simple. It is that simple. One of the things I cannot understand is Europe, why they don't do that. And United States, at times, does not do that. Canada does not do that sometimes. And I can't get it. Why? It's like opening your front door. Come on in. You can stay. Or just leaving your door open. Are you going to do that? Anybody here going to just leave your door open for anybody in the world to walk in and say they're going to live there? Yeah. Yes, Cal. We'll get to that. This weekend, this past weekend, Helen, my friend Helen and I went to a little bit north of Ottawa, and we were 5 hours shy of the tornado that ripped through that area. In fact, we drove down Dunrobin and had to take a side trip. Now, Dunrobin is where the tornado ripped through, and I got to speak while I was there. But the other person, the big main speaker, was Brad Johnson, former station chief of the CIA. And then I spoke for about an hour. And I'm sitting there, you know, thinking, who am I? I mean, I'm following up this guy, Brad Johnson of the CIA. And if you follow me on Facebook, you'll see I posted my picture there. So we never made it. We didn't go to Toronto. We were north, and we were in Ottawa area. It was we got up there. We had a great time. I was very impressed with the crowd that was arranged there. I didn't know all of what was going to happen. It was a nice time, and I do want to go back. I'm kind of excited. We'll see if I can get some more people. But the tornadoes were bad, and for me, I'm the guy who has a CPAP machine. I need to be able to snore less, as I call it, my snoreless machine. And electricity went out about 1 o'clock in the morning there. So, and it hadn't come back on by the time we left, but we did have an incredible meeting. Brad Johnson gave some incredible information and talks, and I'm still kind of chewing on meeting him and talking with him just as a casual person, and it's very, very interesting. I was very impressed. Some of the stuff I can't share, unfortunately, and I will someday with what I can and can't do. I'll figure out what I can and can't do. Let's go on. There is a couple more things that happened in the UK and Europe that might get going too far here. Here's a simple one. I don't know if everybody caught this. There was another Swiss region vote on the burqa ban. Now, it's incredibly smart and security conscious to ban And I say this, why it's a security conscious thing, and it still kills me. People understand it kills me that I'm citing Russia today. I'm a child from the Cold War, and to think that Russia Today is doing better news service than an American news source, just mind-boggling to me. But here we are. Here's another example of that. And this is the danger. It shows you how dangerous what America and Canada have come into with their what used to be their unquestionably great news sources are now compromised liberal bastions of stupidity. So here's this one. Second Swiss region votes in favor of burqa ban. This came out September 23rd. And let's see if there's an author. No author listed, unfortunately. The majority of voters in Switzerland's canton, St. Gallen, have supported the prohibition of face-covering garments in public spaces, making it the second region in the country to introduce such a ban. The northeastern region had held a referendum on Sunday to decide whether stricter rules on the face veils are necessary, among other issues. Around 36% of the region's 500,000 population came out to cast their vote, and nearly 67% of the voters supported the new law. Of course, you want to know who you're talking to. This is, Western society. We place a prime importance on seeing the person you're talking to, doing business with. Yeah, you want to know if they are who they claim? Definitely. So I personally stand behind that. There has been several recorded robberies of people in full burqa and niqab outfits, and some of them were men. And, they've gotten caught, and some of them were men in women's clothing, so in one of these outfits. They might say they're one person and be another. And that's the unfortunate, sad, sorry truth. How about this one? Two arrested in Denmark for trying to supply Islamic State with drones. Two people were arrested in Copenhagen. This is from September 26th, and from Reuters. Two people were arrested in Copenhagen on Wednesday and charged with attempting to supply Islamic State with drones, which the organization has used to carry out attacks, police said. The two were arrested after police and Danish security intelligence services carried out raids in Copenhagen, the police said in a statement. The two persons are suspected of being members of a broader network that ships drones and other supplies to Islamic State from Denmark for use in combat, the police said. The police did not release their names or any details about them. They were charged with attempting to collude with terrorism abroad and will appear in court on Thursday, the police said in a statement. Islamic State has increasingly been using drones to carry out attacks in Syria and Iraq. Well, maybe they figured drones will cause them to have less deaths because they keep going and blowing themselves up. I mean, that's kind of killing your military. How about this one from Sweden? This is the first good news we've had out of Sweden in, I don't know how long, 3-4 years. This is sad that we're finally getting one good piece of news. I just want to hear more good news. And here we go. This one is a mind number. Swedish, this is from Breitbart, Chris Tomlinson. Swedish populists win so many seats, they have difficulty filling them. Now, I can't tell you how good that is because the Swedish Democrats actually know who their Muslim neighbors are. They know the danger they pose. When I was there in Sweden, they exposed this to us. They were the ones teaching us, look, we don't ask questions, so we have several problems here. One of the things they showed us over and over again, which is really mind-numbing, hard for me to understand and accept, because we ask questions here in North America. We believe that asking questions is a way to get the answers. But again, they do not ask questions as part of their culture. So try this one. Somebody will come in and say they're Syrian. Okay, then they automatically get Swedish citizenship. Then they'll say, it might look like they're 30, but they'll say they are 15 years old. Oh, you came here without a parent. So now we need to give you supervision. They don't even check their teeth or anything to make sure they are an adult or a child. And they, you know, put this person in with supervision and, you know, they buy a spot to basically for them to stay. And the insanity is you're putting young adult, you're putting 23 to 30 year old men in classrooms with 15 year olds of your own children. And they're wondering why those rapes and their children are getting bullied. There's so much evidence of this. It's just mind-numbing. And that was what they were sharing with us 2 years ago when I was there. Mind-numbing. But again, I'm so excited. This article with Breitbart, the fact that the Swedish Democrats won so many seats, that they won more seats in local government than they had candidates to fill them. So my hat's off to you, Swedish Democrats. I hope that you take the nationals just the same way. It's got to happen. It's got to happen. All right. How about this one? This was a mind number for me, too. Let me get to the next one first. Yeah, let's see what we got here. Got a couple of really good ones that I don't want to miss. And, yes, I did want to go there first. Okay. So here we go. This one's a surprise. another Breitbart article, and I'm going to put this article in the room real quick. Bouncing between paper and internet. So the internet ones, I can easily put the paper, put the links in. Okay. Here we go. This is kind of a surprise. I mean, it's not really, but the headline isn't really, but listen to what it says. The mom deported from Italy after celebrating terror attacks in prison. A Tunisian imam, this is by Chris Tomlinson, came out the 22nd of September. A Tunisian imam has been expelled from Italy after it was revealed that he had celebrated the Berlin Christmas market terror attack in December of 2016 from his prison cell. The 32-year-old imam, who had been convicted of robbery and drug dealing, was serving his sentence at the Rabiba prison in Rome, where he praised Islamic State and terrorist acts, Il Giornale reports. One of the attacks the imam celebrated was the 2016 Berlin Christmas attack, market attack, in which fellow Tunisian Anis Amri used a truck to run over multiple innocent people, killing a dozen and injuring 56 others. After the attack, it was revealed that Amri was said to have been radicalized in an Italian prison. Wait a minute. Does he need to be radicalized? This is where I have my issues, and I don't really believe the concept of radicalization. So bear with me, people, if you believe that. I just don't see it to be true. The imam was also said to have been spreading radical Islam. Wait, so he's radicalized, and now he's radical enough to spread stuff. So wait a minute. They're not really getting this message. You know, they would think that they believe this process, but he's out there telling everybody about what he believes. Among the prisoners, he's sharing what this radical, quote, radical belief, which he's doing is he's sharing Islam unadulterated. So he gets caught doing this and celebrating the terror. And the expulsion order comes after the 32-year-old had served his prison sentence and was set for release on August 22nd. Instead of being released, he was transferred to a repatriation center along with three Egyptian nationals who were considered threats to Italian national security. All four men were put on a direct flight from Rome to Cairo on Wednesday afternoon. Oh, this is a good thing. So the case is just the latest example of the presence of radical Islam in European prisons, with the problem being a major issue in France. Last year, the two radical Islamic clerics at Fresnes prison were caught plotting a terror attack that they were to carry out upon their release. and investigators also managed to find smuggled phones that allowed the pair to communicate with the Islamic State. Prisons across Europe have been referred to as breeding grounds for Islamic radicalism in a 2016 study released by International Center for the Study of Radicalization and Political Violence. Yeah. This stuff is happening. Patrick Dunleavy's book, I'll tell everybody, you have to look up Patrick Dunleavy, read his work for the Investigative Project on Terrorism, look on Amazon for his books. If you really have an interest in knowing more about how terrorism and is involved in our prisons, there's nobody better to actually listen to. His works are outstanding, and he's a former top-notch guy in New York State prisons. And he is the right guy to investigate that stuff still. And now he's retired. So he's doing this all pretty much voluntary consultant type work. He's really outstanding. If you get to read his work, please do let him know I sent you. Here we go. Here's another one. Some of these articles I pick up and I sit there and I just go, why? How about this one? I mean, this is a article on, hold on a second, get in the chat room. Here we go. And posting it in. And if this doesn't translate, use Google Translate. I now have a lot of my stuff automatically translating, so I apologize if it did. This is Czech police. Slavic Islamist was planning a lone wolf attack. The first Slavic Islamist radical who planned a terrorist attack in the Czech Republic was not a member of any organized attack. Okay, these lone wolves, they know somebody, so they're not really lone. So let's get that down. It's a bad name. They're not really lone. They do meet each other. They do talk to each other, so they're not really lone. It's just kind of a misnomer. The first Slavic Islamic radical, identified only as Dominic K., arrested last year in the Czech Republic, was actually planning a terror attack, Czech police chief Tomas Tuis told the Czech television on September 23rd. The radicalized Slavic, who frequented mosques, and see, he's not so lone, he's going through mosque to mosque, operated under the adopted name of Abdulrahman, was not a member of any organized group and should rather be considered a lone wolf, too, he said, as quoted by the Tasser News Service. This person really was planning a terrorist attack, Tui continued, as quoted by Tasser. Only excellent cooperation between the intelligence services and the Czech police prevented a possible serious incident from taking place. Says, who are the terrorist idols and helpers? The young man from Slovakia stated that his spiritual role model was a former Prague imam who was earlier charged with supporting terrorism but managed to flee. He is wanted for supporting his brother and sister-in-law who have joined jihadists in Syria. The Muslim community in the Czech Republic did not alert the authorities to the radicalization of the Slavic man. According to the head of the police, it seemed that Dominic K. was not, however, part of an organized group. The Slavic living in the Czech Republic converted to Islam 3 years ago. It was found that he posted disturbing messages on social media, including one with the slogan, "This country will be ours, and it won't be for everyone." Sound familiar? If we talk about Islamization, that's what he's talking about. After converting to Islam, he began wearing military garb and greeting others with a raised right forefinger, a salute used by the Islamic State terrorist group. The man, who was found by the police to have suspicious chemicals and manuals for producing a bomb at his flat, claimed that he only intended to use the substances to make New Year's Eve fireworks, but the police found his explanation unconvincing. The chemicals were meant for producing weapons, not petards, noted the Czech police anti-terror department. As a Muslim, he shouldn't even be celebrating New Year's Eve. And that is entirely true. So you see these things. There's so many things that like they're supposedly not supposed to do, and yet they do them. I mean, this is just mind-numbing stuff. Mind-numbing. Okay, let me get to one of my next articles. This... I don't usually get into articles from Saudi Arabia, but this one caught my eye and I just didn't know how to take it. Saudi Arabia accused of turning a blind eye to international terrorism financing by Global Watchdog. Now, this comes from Forbes. So, again, this article caught my eye because it's in Forbes, and I just did not expect this. So, this is by Dominic Dudley, and it was published September 25th. Saudi Arabia, again, the title is Saudi Arabia Accused of Turning a Blind Eye to International Terrorist Financing. Now, I'm going to name, what I'm going to tell you is this group, the Financial Action Task Force. The reason why I pulled this article is because when I was doing my academic studies and intelligence analysis, a lot of the good stuff on money, the movement of money and everything, came from this group, the Financial Action Task Force. And it's very, very good group that do a lot of work on counterterrorism. It was really interesting stuff. And they talk about money laundering and other stuff. They have an incredible, incredible journal, academic journal, that I think anybody of interest would be interested in counterterrorism type stuff. It's outstanding. So let me get into this. Saudi Arabia has been strongly criticized for its failure to tackle money laundering and international terrorism financing in a new report, which will make uncomfortable reading for the authorities in Riyadh. A report published on September 24th by the FATF, the Financial Action Task Force, an intergovernmental body based in Paris. Now, this intergovernmental body we're talking about is not just European. I believe there are people from maybe Canada, America, and other countries on this. It's a very, very interesting group. It also pointed, a report published by them, said Saudi Arabia is not effectively investigating and prosecuting individuals involved in larger scale or professional money laundering activity and is not effectively confiscating the proceeds of crime. It also pointed out the lack of attention paid to financing of terrorist groups outside the country, while acknowledging the prioritizing domestic concerns is understandable. The report also said that almost exclusive focus of authorities on domestic terrorist financing offenses means that the authorities are not prioritizing disruption of terrorist financing, support for threats and their support for threats outside of the kingdom. This sums involved in all of this could be large. The proceeds of crime in Saudi Arabia are estimated to be anywhere between $12 billion and $32 billion. The main areas where criminals are making money are thought to be illicit trafficking in narcotics, corruption, and counterfeiting and piracy. Most of these profits go elsewhere, with an estimated 70 to 80% of proceeds of crimes leaving the kingdom. Despite that, the Saudi authorities failed to repatriate any criminal proceeds from in the four-year period from 2013 to 2016. So they didn't catch anybody with drugs and then keep their stuff. Wow. Maybe it's because they don't need to keep their stuff. I don't know. But, I mean, that's we use something called the RICO statute and take people's possessions because of it. It's just kind of mind-numbing that, you know, they expect the Saudis to do this, and they're going to be more behind the jihadists because it's kind of hard for them to say anything else. And scary, scary stuff when you start looking into it. The report is about six pages. Sorry, this article I have is about six pages. You can imagine the report is much different. This next article... Oh, let's see which one I want to do. All right, skip to we'll do that one. I'll do the art one first. Maldives. Police used pickaxes to destroy artwork deemed un-Islamic. I found this article in NPR of all places. It's by Lauren Frayer. Maldives police used pickaxes to destroy artwork deemed un-Islamic. It took British artist Jason DeCaris Taylor 9 months to develop his latest work, a 20-foot-tall stainless steel cube decorated with life-size human statues and semi-submerged in a coral lagoon and crystal blue waters off the Maldives Islands. But it took the Maldivian police just a few hours to wreck it. Acting on a court order, the police used pickaxes to smash the statues on Friday. Muslim politicians, including the outgoing Maldivian president, had deemed the artwork un-Islamic because it depicts human figures. Local police tweeted photos of men using electric saws, ropes, and axes to dislodge the statues. It was extremely shocked and heartbroken to learn that my sculpture had been destroyed, Dakar Taylor wrote on Instagram. He calls it a sad day for art and a sad day for the environment. Famous for palm-fringed atolls and bikini-clad international tourists, the Maldives is an overwhelmingly Muslim island nation of fewer than 500,000 people in the Indian Ocean. In recent years, Saudi Arabia has increased its investment there, funding mosques and spreading more orthodox and austere version of Islam. Muslims generally avoid the depiction of human forms in art. Islam's holy book, the Quran, does not explicitly outlaw them, but it condemns idolatry. Police reportedly sent a local Maldivian newspaper photos and video of the destruction, including one clip in which a man is heard saying, Allah Akbar, or God is great. The Karis Taylor installation called Corallium debuted on July on a Maldives atoll that's home to a Fairmont luxury resort, which reportedly costs up to $3,800 a night. The artwork immediately drew criticism from the Maldives president, Abdullah Yemen, who was running for re-election. He lost in the polls to an opposition lawmaker on Sunday and has said he will step down. In late July, Yemen issued a statement asking the country's tourism ministry to facilitate the sculpture's removal due to significant public sentiment against the installation. So, if it's un-Islamic, it's going to get destroyed. We see this over and over and over throughout our history. It's not a surprise. It's happened in recent history when Muslims take over an area. They want to destroy what's not Islamic. They got to have that Islam. They got to use that Islamic Islamization of knowledge. If you can't turn it into Islam, they have to destroy it. So this is stuff you see happening, unfortunately. And it's probably happening today someplace where they're destroying something else. It's sad. It's scary. There's so much more to do. Cal, can you tell me the name of the show on Friday before I go through and the name of the John's show too? I want to go through the shows and I have forgotten that information. Going through. Here we go. I do want to remind you that we do have some great shows out there. There is on Friday's show, we'll come back and talk about this because I'm not remembering, unfortunately, and I'm the new guy. I'm the new guy that we have on Friday. And, it is Crime Stoppers, Sharia Crime Stoppers on Friday. I'm kind of excited about that because they do work with United West, and the fact that Global Patriot Radio is working with United West in such a public way, I'm excited. We have some people who already do work with United West, but it's nice to see a forum provided for them. And going on, we have on Saturday, we have Usama Dakdak. And then on Sunday, we have Erica Kafiristan. And come take a listen to him because he has some really interesting things to share. And he does it simply. So if you think you're going to learn – I'll just tell you, you're going to learn something and it'll surprise you. And it's Megan Maurice. Okay, I definitely have to have a way to listen to the Megan Maurice for Sharia Crime Stoppers on Friday. I'll just find a way to do that one of these days soon. On Monday, we have Alan Vito. Alan Vito are our professional radio people. They definitely hold the show. They are incredible. They do a show called Mamma Mia, No Sharia, and come and listen in on Monday. Very interesting group. And then Tuesday, we have the beautiful Cal Fritzy with Infidels Are Watching. And then come back Wednesday, we have, I think it's called Invictus Wednesday, Introspection on Wednesday, John Ethan. Now, this guy is incredibly knowledgeable about policy, foreign policy. When you come and listen to him, you're going to be really surprised. It's kind of a breath of fresh air, conservative fresh air that'll just kind of blow your mind. And then you come back Thursday, and I will be here. And hopefully my voice will be slightly better. I've had this cold for a couple of days, and now it's going to my voice. So we'll see how things go. The stuff that I'm working on now, it's funny because all this stuff I'm working on now, I see things coming together. I'm still working on exposing this textbook. I keep talking about that. It's been out for like 20 years. And what's scary to me is this textbook is anti-Christian, anti-Jewish, and pro-jihadi. I shared this textbook with a couple colleagues of mine, and one of them is another great Global Patriot Radio fan, and I'm excited to see how his work's going to go. I got Rabbi Nachman to join me, so I'm bragging, and I'm excited that he's going to help us pull this out. Hopefully, my goal is in October to be able to roll the whole thing out to you guys, and so you can see how unbelievably dangerous this book is. It's far more dangerous than I ever expected. And I have only just started going through some of this stuff that I against. Not just me writing this. And I did this on purpose. I asked other people to join me so I don't get that give that impression that I'm full of that much bias. And you'll see what I mean by that in the near future. So My goal here is to get the truth out, and I only have a few more stories, so let's get them going. Australia. I am upset with Australia today, reading some of these articles, and you'll hear why really quick. This first article is by Jihad Watch. Came out September 26th. Australia, Muslim who advocated murder of Jews, found not guilty. The man said, "When you come to a Jew, any Jew, even an old one, who looks humble, pretending to be humble, strike him in the head. When you strike him in the head, he will not even sneeze. He will die." The Quran says, "When you meet the unbelievers, strike their necks." 47:4. And surely find intents of the people in animosity towards the believers of the Jews. Quran 582. But of course, what else could this be but more of the global outbreak of mental illness? This is just sad. Now, this article comes from abc.net.au, but a man who encouraged killing of Jewish people on Facebook heard from paranoid schizophrenia, supposedly. Man who posted videos of unfit. This is the stuff that bothers me to say when it doesn't fit that you attack someone if you're a paranoid schizophrenic. The two things don't go together. I mean, if you're attacking somebody in delusional, maybe. I just, some of this just does not work together. Adelaide man who posted videos on Facebook encouraged the killing of Jewish people had been found not guilty because he was suffering from paranoid schizophrenia at the time. At the time. So you're telling me he needs medication and he needs supervision to make sure he takes the medication. Lock him up. The 52-year-old man from Flinders Park in Adelaide West, whose name was suppressed because the first Australian to be charged with advocating terrorism in 2016. The charge is related to four videos the man posted on Facebook between 2015 and 2016, where he encouraged others to kill Israeli soldiers and Jewish people. During the videos, he speaks in Arabic, referring to himself as a commander with Hezbollah, and can be seen brandishing a large kitchen knife and a tomahawk. in one of the videos, which had been viewed by more than 19,000 times, he calls for Jewish people to be attacked with knives. When you come to a Jew, any Jew, even an old one, who looks humble, pretending to be humble, strike him in the head. When you strike him in the head, he will not even sneeze. He will die, he says. This is just, this kind of stuff comes from the Quran. He's getting these ideas from the Quran. So if he's, this is why I keep saying, there is no radical Islam. It's people who are devout to Islam that become the, quote, terrorists. They're basically jihadis acting on their belief. And this is what the truth is. You can find this by just doing your own research. Some of this is just too scary to get into. It's mind-numbing when you start to do your own research. If you don't trust me, and all these news stories that I've just been sharing, news stories, they come from the press. They're out there. I've been sharing the websites with you guys. To say that some of this stuff isn't real is mind-numbing, ignorant. My thing to tell people is get this stuff out. Share it. Share it with everybody. The stuff that we're doing with Global Patriot Radio is of great importance. We have to get people to share what we're doing. We have to get the word out. So please share our shows. Please share the news stories. If you want to subscribe to my subscribe to me on Facebook, subscribe to me on LinkedIn or on Twitter, please do. I share news stories every day, every morning, and you'll get about 9 to 10 news stories. You'll sit there and go, why? And at the end of the week, I share a whole bunch of them on the show. I'm hoping to have a guest next week. We'll see how things go. And I want to say thank you all for listening. It's been great. And Vorpal, thanks for being first in. Annie, I'm glad to have you still with us. And Cal, Gary, and Eric, and Bigfoot, God bless you all for listening. And let me see if I can just line up the goodbye red, white, and blue. And here we go. Where are you, my favorite red, white, and blue?
American girls and American guys, we'll always stand up and salute. We'll always recognize when we see your glory flying. There's a lot of men dead, so we can sleep in peace at night when we lay down our heads. My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard till the day that he died. He wanted my mother, my brother, my sister, and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free. Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. Soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole of the red, white, and blue. Oh, justice will be served and the battle will rage. This big dog will fight when you rattle his cage. You'll be sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. Cause we'll put a boot in your ass, it's the American way. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be hell when you hear Mother Freedom is raining down on you. And I'll brought to you courtesy of the red, white, and blue.